I want to preface my remarks by, first of all, greeting all of you and tell you how gratifying it is to see all of you in the audience and absorbing much of a field that I love. And I want to share with you briefly about an adventure I've been having in the last 15 months. And what I find so interesting is that in December, about 15 months ago, I started a blog called LabSoft News. And there's the URL for that. I did it partly as part of my retirement planning. I'm now active emeritus at Michigan. I've been replaced by Ewell Belice, who will be the next speaker, who is the director of informatics at the University of Michigan. And I started this blog, I think, partly to keep myself amused, but I've now come to understand various aspects of the blogosphere. And I started off writing a note every day, 7 days a week, and I did that until about 2 months ago, and now I write a blog note 5 days a week. And tomorrow afternoon, there's going to be a parallel session in which I'm going to discuss some of the mechanics of blogging, and I'm going to be working with a representative of Bio-Rad that has a wonderful site called QCNet. And I've become acutely aware of the power of the blogosphere and the power of the internet to educate. And what I've done is, and I now become aware of this powerful synergy between this meeting and the blogosphere in terms of building this community. And we'll talk more about this tomorrow afternoon, but I currently have 1,700 visitors a week to the blog. About 1,000 come directly in, and about another 700 a week view the notes through RSS feed and through email feed. But what I find so amazing is this is an idea, this notion of merger of radiology and pathology, is an idea I got seriously interested in probably 4 or 5 months ago. But Richard Friedberg, actually, when he was at the VA in Atlanta, he actually did this within the VA system. But what intrigues me is you all familiar with the velocity of ideas on the internet and the web and the power of the resources that are now at our disposal, and particularly the synergy between a meeting such as this and the blogosphere to promote an idea. A new idea that you may not, some of the entrenched conservative elements in our field may not be enthused about. But we have these other vehicles for pushing out ideas, and the masthead of my blog calls it an idea factory for clinical pathology and the clinical lab industry. And I've had discussions with a number of you thinking about some of the articles that we write for print publication. And I think there's been various studies, but you write an article, you'll spend a year, 8 months, 9 months, a year, writing an article. It gets published in a print publication. And there are various estimates about how many people would read cover to cover an article in a print publication, but some people have estimated 100, 150, 200 people might read an article and absorb what it is you're trying to teach in that article. So here's a blog, admittedly a short form of journalism. I'm not drawing an equivalency between a refereed article and a blog. On the other hand, I have 1,700 people a week reading ideas that I post on the blog or some of my guest bloggers. So the velocity of ideas that flow through a blog and the number of people you can touch with ideas is really astonishing. And this is not something, I'm just tagging along. This is part of today's modern communication and the vehicles that are at our disposal. At any rate, the blog is when I started promoting this idea. And I must say, we talked about the synergy between the blogosphere and this meeting, creating this community. I was able to then bring in some speakers that could promote this idea. I think this is a good idea. Whether it will get any traction in the field, I'm not sure. But at least I've got you thinking about the idea. So let's proceed. Here are some of the major concepts that I'm going to talk about in this lecture. I'm going to talk about something called the early health model and molecular medicine. And these are precursors to the discussion of this merger that I'm proposing between lab medicine, pathology, and radiology. Now, what's astonishing about this, the early health model, and again, I continue to be surprised, is that these are two concepts, early health model and molecular medicine, that have been promoted by for-profit companies. In the case of early health model, it's been promoted by GE, and molecular medicine has been promoted by Siemens. So if you had said to me 5 years ago that you would get ideas that you found tantalizing in press releases from large global corporations, I would have said you're crazy. But that is what, in fact, is happening. A lot of the substance of this article flows out of ideas that have been hatched by these two companies. And I find this astonishing. I will then go on to talk about differentiating the diagnostic domain from the therapeutic domain and talk about the future role of prognosis and prognosticians. And this feeds into the early health model and also to the idea of molecular medicine, which I will define for you. We'll then talk about molecular imaging, which hasn't been discussed thus far, but molecular imaging is a brand new field, part of medical imaging, which is bringing radiology closer to pathology and lab medicine, because the crux of molecular imaging is the use of biomarkers and then finding substances that bind to these in situ biomarkers and identifying lesions. So radiology is moving from a specialty which will only identify a space-occupying lesion to a discipline that will not only show the talk about the dimensions of that tumor, but the biologic nature of that tumor, depending on the in situ biomarkers. So this notion of conversion of radiology with pathology, I didn't do this. This is technology and science which are bringing these together. You can call this merger, you can call this convergence, but they're coming together. I'll then talk about a rationale for the merger of pathology, lab medicine, and radiology. Pathology should be defined as surgical path plus lab medicine plus radiology into a department that I'm calling diagnostic medicine, or I've also called diagnostic and prognostic medicine. And then I'll follow up with a discussion of a possible trajectory for discussions in merger. When I first presented this to my chairman, Dr. J. Hess, this idea, he said, I think that's a bridge too far. But then when he started thinking about it, he said, I think you may be onto something, at least in terms of some early discussions. Now, what I'm going to do here, in the right-hand corner, you will see this essentially maps to my major categories in the first slide. So this allows you to track my arguments going through based on my first slide, which was the summary. So let's talk about the early health model, or the EHM. This came out of some GE executives, and I believe this represents a major shift in healthcare delivery with increased emphasis on preclinical or presymptomatic disease. So these are the five major elements of the early health model. Personal health, so consumers have a stake in this, which is absolutely critical. Diagnosis, and that diagnosis encompasses medical imaging, molecular imaging, plus molecular diagnostics, which I'll define later. Prognosis, treatment, and information technology. And this is the glue that holds the other parts together. There's also two divisions of early health model. There is the applied, which is essentially what happens in hospitals, and also the discovery, which is the research. So discovery, applied relates to clinical practice, and discovery is the research component. When I raised this issue, I came to realize very early, this issue of the early health model, that there is something in this for everybody to hate. The healthcare payers are very nervous about this because this adds to the cost of healthcare. I talk frequently about large biomarker panels. So the healthcare payers are struggling to pay for clinically diagnosed diseases, and now we have molecular imaging and large panels of biomarkers, which some of which, at least in the early stages, will be very pricey. That is to detect preclinical disease. And they're saying, we can't pay for what we have to pay for now. How are we going to support this? So they're nervous. Of course, the payers are nervous about everything. Now, MDs are nervous. I know there's a lot of younger people in the audience, but I was trained in medical school to take a history and physical. And if the patient said, I'm not bothered by anything, I would say, well, why are you here? We're used to dealing with signs and symptoms. So the MDs are nervous about this because we've been trained to diagnose disease based on signs and symptoms. Big Pharma's nervous because the clinical trials to date have all been based on patients with symptomatic disease. The criticality of diagnostic methods in this model demands a very high degree of integration and collaboration across lab and pathology and radiology, because the patient is of no help. They're healthy. They're saying, fine, what's going to happen to me in the next 5 years? I have no problems today. So this is going to require very tight integration between the superb diagnosticians, and that's collaboration between the radiologist and the pathologist. And I love to tell this story. I was in the autopsy room probably 15 years ago, and those are the days when the radiologists would come into the autopsy room. I think that's a practice which is long gone. Does anyone ever see the radiologist in the autopsy room? But those of you with gray hair, remember when we had a view box in the autopsy room and the radiologists would come down with their films. So I was running the large bowel. I opened up and there was a large 3 or 4 centimeter polypoid cancer in the colon. And the radiologist was there. And I called him over and I said, here's the tumor. He looked at it and he said, no, that's not it. He said, come over to the view box. I want you to see my x-ray. So these are the people who are unhappy. Who's happy with this? What group of people? The patients. Because they're dissatisfied with the current approach when told by MDs to come back when they have symptoms. So why is this early health model so important for pathology and lab medicine? The essence of early health model is early diagnosis. That's what we do. We do diagnosis and we do prognosis. So if we develop molecules that bind to these in situ biomarkers, they can also be used to develop therapeutic agents to the disease cells. So in fact, we can get more into the therapy business. So theoretically and in the long run, the EHM may reduce costs, but I'm not going to go out on the limb and say in the short term that it will reduce costs. The EHM is also important because it incorporates personal health. And with people paying more and more as co-payer, the first dollar payers, they're going to be much more involved in their own health. So they want to know what's going on with their health. Now, I talked about GE essentially be the first ones to define this early health model. Siemens were the ones that defined this molecular medicine. And Bob McGonigal snuck me into a press conference last July in which Mohammad Naraghi from Siemens talked about molecular medicine. So as the name implies, molecular medicine focuses on the molecular basis of disease. And it's necessary to understand this molecular basis to diagnose, to determine prognosis, and to treat various lesions. That's pathologist stock and trade, understanding the molecular basis of disease. So an understanding of molecular diagnosis enables and promotes the following advances: early detection of disease, more effective monitoring of treatment efficacy, selection of individualized therapy or personalized medicine, and expansion of the potential for screening programs and the determination of the genetic predisposition to disease. Now, as part of my blogging, I never even thought about this, but what's more important for the patient diagnosis, the patient's prognosis, or treatment? Now, I did a little delving into the history of medicine. And in ancient times, I never knew this, there were two schools of thought in medicine. There was what was called the Cnidian, which focused on diagnosis, and the Hippocratic school, or the Coan school, which focused on treatment and prognosis. Now, who ever heard of Dr. Cnidian? No one. Hippocrates won the day, and his style was gentle treatment and prognosis, and the Hippocratic physicians carried cared less about diagnosis and more about generalized treatment and prognosis. And the Hippocratic approach emphasized more passive treatment. Now, medical practice today is skewing toward the Canadian school, which focuses on diagnosis and aggressive treatment. And also, prognosis is growing in importance. Look at the tests that are coming to market. MammaPrint, which is essentially a TMA assay, which for early breast cancer patients tells them their predisposition to develop disseminated disease. And this MammaPrint, for those of you who have been following the so-called IVD-MIA issue with the FDA, that has now been approved by the FDA, which I don't quite understand. This has not been approved, that is FDA regulation of IVD-MIAs, but essentially they have already approved the MammaPrint under these non-approved rules. However, with genomics, proteomics, and new imaging modalities, diagnosis will become more routine. This is the beginning of the process. That is to say, you do your large panels of biomarkers, and the diagnosis is going to be relatively routine. The complex part will be determining the prognosis with tests like MammaPrint, and also determining the treatment, the personalized medicine. Given this genetic set of constituents of this tumor, what's the best agent to treat this patient with? So in my view, prognosis and therapeutics will be considered sort of a higher art in healthcare delivery because it's much more integrative. Emphasis on integrative. So I have this vision of pathologists sitting next to radiologists in two cubicles, calling up images, calling up profiles from molecular diagnostics, and have them sort of conversing about what's going on here, pre-op, post-op, looking at these chemical profiles. That's my vision of the future. So what's the rationale for the inclusion of prognosis in this early health model? Prognosis involves predicting the likely outcome of disease based on the condition of the patient and the action of the disease. Now, in the past, this is the way I was trained. You'd look up some table and come up with some five-year survival. I refer to the FDA and their use of this term IVD-MIA, which stands for In Vitro Diagnostic Multivariate Indexed Assay, which is their fancy word for referring to TMAs. At any rate, Oncotype has been approved by them. This assesses the prognosis of a patient with mild breast disease, what their likelihood is of a poor outcome or more aggressive disease. So prognosis takes advantage of genomic, proteomic science, and a deep understanding of biology. So I think that we're going to see a new form of clinician, perhaps combined with a diagnostician, but a prognostician because of all this sophisticated genetic work we're doing. So this is one of the key slides. You might say to me, well, why do you think this convergence or merger is going to take place? And I say, I'm not sure it's going to take place, but what I'm sure of is that Siemens and GE have placed a $25 billion bet on this convergence. So they're making, now you could say they don't know what they're doing, or you could also say that they may be onto something. So GE Medical purchased Amersham for $9.5 billion and a portion of Abbott Diagnostics for $8.1 billion in the pursuit of the early health model. Siemens purchased DPC for $1.9 billion and Bayer for 5.4 in pursuit of molecular medicine. So this adds up to a $25 billion bet. Now, the pressure will be great from these companies for MDs, and you can define pressure in different ways, marketing, sales calls, whatever, setting the wheels in motion that there'll be a set of expectations on the part of patients. And you know from watching television that Big Pharma is sort of setting up consumers to have some sort of interest and even ask for prescription drugs by name. I think you may see some of this. And GE, in fact, has started a marketing campaign called Reimagining, which I believe is directed to both consumers and physicians for the power of imaging. So in the remainder of the lecture, I want to discuss to what extent healthcare delivery system will react to these initiatives which are now rising up out of the for-profit sector. Now, I'm now going to go on to molecular imaging. So here's some details. Molecular imaging involves the use of probes, which is synonymous with biomarkers, that are used to image various targets, particularly in vivo. Now, these biomarkers react chemically with various tissues and alter medical image according to these molecular changes. Now, this is markedly different from previous imaging modalities that created images based on tissue densities or water content. Molecular imaging also allows for quantitative analysis. So with molecular imaging, not only are they doing pre-op diagnosis, but they're looking for efficacy of therapy by to what extent, measured in millimeters, tumors are shrinking. The research is currently focusing on pre-disease, so we come back to the early health model, defined as molecular states before the onset of symptoms. And GE, Siemens, and Philips are setting up these molecular imaging research centers around the world. If you read the mission of these research centers, half of it or three-quarters of it is identifying new biomarkers, which is what we do, but in the in vitro situation. So I talk about biomarker discovery as a common goal for both pathology and molecular imaging. This is a common basis for discussion. This both applied in research pathology and lab medicine have been, our major focus has been in vitro, and in imaging, their focus is now both applied in research and pathology and lab medicine have been involved in vitro and in vivo biomarkers. Now, molecular imaging is now looking at what they call in situ biomarkers, whereas we focus it in vitro. So this is the commonality that we're discussing, the distinction between in vitro biomarkers and in situ biomarkers. I talked about all these research centers being involved in biomarker discovery. I would also make the point, and I raised this before, that complex imaging studies are too expensive and capital intensive for use in pre-disease discovery, because you have someone comes in and says, nothing's wrong with me. It doesn't make sense to do complex imaging. What makes sense is to draw an aliquot of serum and then do these large biomarker panels and then direct your imaging studies based on what comes out of these panels. And as everyone in this audience knows, when you have diseased tissues and tumors, how do they talk to each other or among themselves? They talk using protein by elaborating upregulated or downregulated proteins or abnormal proteins. That's the language of cells. And because we have access to the serum, it's so easy, and we can run these panels and have the algorithms to interpret the results, we're in the position to diagnose this early disease. We now go into the sort of the heart of the lecture, which is talk about 10 reasons why pathology and lab medicine should discuss convergence or merger. Now, I'm very mindful of the fact that medical specialty boundaries are relatively rigid. You can't be in pathology for 30 years and not understand that. However, there is some ambiguity around some specialty boundaries. I mean, you look at orthopedic surgery, physical medicine, and sports medicine. Or look at cardiology. That's the most amazing story in my lifetime. So essentially, the early passing of catheters, that was the general province of the radiologists. And the cardiologist said, we can learn how to do that. And not only can we do the imaging, but we can get the patient out of trouble if something happens, something goes amiss during that imaging procedure. Here's another example where clinical hematology oncology has morphed largely into oncology, and much of the cellular morphology has been picked up by the hematopathologist. So there is some play in these specialty boundaries. So I'm now going to list 10 reasons why I believe pathology and lab medicine should merge with radiology. The first reason is substantial overlap already exists between the disciplines, and there's a common basis for discussion. The two disciplines are already very similar. Both create diagnostic reports using sophisticated IT technology. I previously discussed this convergence is being driven in part by these biomarkers. Now, some IT vendors are already considering or producing a common viewer. So you can then view images or data at the back end on the LIS or the RIS or the PAC system. Now, the radiologists are more advanced than we are in terms of image storage and accession with their PACS system. And pathologists have only embraced fairly recently image storage. But both groups use cutting-edge science and technology to render diagnoses. Now, the second point is the blending of imaging, molecular diagnosis, and IT is already underway in the four provinces. I won't belabor this point. I've talked about the $25 billion bet. GE has launched their re-imaging campaign, and they're going to essentially, there's going to be a sense of expectation, I believe, shortly that pathologists and radiologists will begin to integrate some of their reports to provide a report that discusses both imaging studies, surgical pathology results, and biomarker results. The third point is that molecular imaging has the potential in the future to compete with surgical pathology. I'm going to approach this topic very, very gingerly. Most medical imaging seeks to identify the mass and shape of a lesion, but does not address the biology. Now, the PET technology makes three-dimensional images and discusses the functional processes of the cells. That's what PET is all about. And as Don talked about before, we're starting to see synchronization or integration of different imaging modalities. We've talked about molecular imaging and how that can give you a clue as to the diagnosis. I believe that in some future time that molecular imaging will produce not only the dimensions of the lesion, but strong clues as to the diagnosis of that lesion. Now, surgical pathology, and there's no doubt about this, is the current diagnostic gold standard. There's nothing that rivals surgical pathology. But I believe that it's a wise approach at this time to collaborate in order to help our colleagues validate these technologies rather than stay aloof and hold them at arm's length. Now, here are some of the overarching benefits that can be achieved. Right now, we operate in two silos with few interactions. A closer integrated approach would yield both qualitative and strategic benefits. For example, there's no coding system in radiology reports similar to SNOMED, and report retrieval is difficult. However, radiology uses DICOM, a standard for handling images. With closer integration, radiology could adopt SNOMED, and pathology could adopt some DICOM variant for image storage and retrieval. I believe that there's enhanced quality of reporting with merged LIS-RIS databases. And Yule will be talking about, later in the conference, Yule Belise will talk about querying image databases, and he has some very exciting work that he's done. I think from a quality perspective, we don't yet fully comprehend the value of this close collaboration and the integration of radiology databases and image databases and textual databases with ours. I think there will be greater value than simply retrieving past diagnoses by querying by image. We can track the success of prior treatment. And we can talk about the advocacy of analysis and integration of all preoperative in vivo and in vitro studies. However, there are some barriers on our side. I believe that most of our pathology residents are really not sufficiently sophisticated to actually understand and integrate molecular diagnostic results and reports at the same time that they're reading out surgical path slides. I only discovered this recently, but the radiologists are under a threat from clinicians, so it's politically useful for them to join forces. You might say that why would they want to talk to us, that is radiologists? But in fact, a lot of their work is migrating out of radiology. For example, there are now portable ultrasound systems that weigh a few pounds. And the emergency medicine docs are now have fellowships in portable ultrasound. So some of these imaging modalities are leaving radiology. To refer back to what I said before, cardiologists are stealing a lot of this work. So this talks about the porosity of the specialty boundaries. So our strength is control over all in vitro testing in surgical pathology and cytology, which is the gold standard for diagnosis. The strengths of radiology our control over most digital imaging and evolving molecular imaging. And the point that I'm just throwing in here is that some capital acquisitions in radiology may not be necessary if we screen early with biomarker panels. So some of this imaging that's going on with long multi-week waiting lists, some of this could be alleviated if we were to do more screening using multiple biomarker panels. A new specialty of diagnostic medicine could create a critical mass of trainees, and that's what's happened with cardiology. Essentially, they trained the cardiology to do the imaging of coronary arteries. These cardiology fellows went out into hospitals, populated the hospital committees, and then went head-to-head with the radiologists in terms of the practice patterns in that hospital. The same thing could happen if we train superb diagnosticians and prognosticians. A combined radiologist and pathologist would then go out and set up these departments of diagnostic medicine in these hospitals. In other words, in the last bullet, I talk about these residents and fellows trained in imaging plus lab medicine and surgical pathology could serve as a salient for this new specialty. I believe that the core technologies and surgical path would benefit from the infusion of new technology. In my view, surgical pathology has been stuck in a rut using some core technologies that are many, many decades old. I'm not suggesting that we abandon the stained thin section, which is very cost effective. However, current histopathology techniques will serve as the diagnostic gold standard, but we can then supplement them with some of these new modalities. In other words, the time is now ripe to begin to supplement histopathology with newer and evolving technologies. Now, these imaging studies yield very high profit margins, and that's why I think many hospital administrators would be loath to give them up. However, our problem is that much of lab testing is viewed as a commodity. And in fact, we are the cause of that, because we've deployed technology such as these high-throughput analyzers, which are automated assembly lines. So to a certain extent, it's a race to the bottom. In other words, we have created this commoditization of lab testing. Now, part of this will be solved by molecular diagnostics and a more esoteric testing. However, I believe with an integrated diagnostic departmental hub, some of the magic may rub off on us, particularly for molecular diagnostics. And I believe that this merger would cause research capital that's now invested in imaging would flow into pathology. And I talked about these molecular imaging research centers being established around the world as major foci of biomarker research. With a merged specialty, I believe that some of this research capital investments would flow into this nexus between imaging and IVD. And when Mohammed Naraki spoke at AACC in July, he talked about imaging and in vitro diagnostics. And then he talked about the white space between those two entities, which needs exploration. So just finishing up the scenarios for the merger, I've got about 10 minutes. I made the argument before that surgical path is the gold standard. And the radiologists absolutely need pathology to validate the diagnoses that will start flowing out of molecular imaging. Now, I make the point, and this was suggested to me by Dr. Friedberg in a telephone conversation. Surgical pathologists are not looking at cells in vivo. We fix, dehydrate, stain to create our system of artifacts. The radiologists work with their system of artifacts to detect diseased abnormalities. Think of the synergies with us sitting side by side with the radiologists and collaborating and coming up with a common language to define and cause overlap between our artifacts and their artifacts, and I think the patients would benefit from this. So I believe that the first step for early discussions will be bench research collaboration relating to biomarkers. The second step will be IT convergence. And the third step, what I discussed before, will be integrated reporting functions. When necessary and appropriate, I believe that all radiology lab and pathology reports will comment on both diagnosis and prognosis. And that what I would like to see evolve is a cadre of diagnostic specialists who will adopt multidisciplinary approach with review and analysis of all in vitro and in vivo data. While this is taking place, the pathology training programs need to be reformed to emphasize the criticality of molecular diagnostics so that no surgical path slide will be examined without an analysis of the database for that patient and discussing the molecular basis of the disease. I'll go over this relatively quickly, talking about some of these IT issues as they relate to eMERGE department. Now, one of the vendors, Aspira, in the vendor area is already talking about and integrated what they called CIMS, which is a clinical image management system. That is a single system to store all clinical imaging in a health system. That would include radiology, pathology, critical labs, ophthalmology, GI, radiology, and so forth. Now, the availability in the market of such CIMSs may provide a stimulus for this convergence of the disciplines that I'm talking about. Now, here's the enemy, and Yule's going to be talking about this in the next lecture. The EHR vendors, electronic health record vendors, view that all integration should take place at the level of their central clinical system, the EMR or the EHR. I support the view that Yule will be advocating next on the podium the deployment of best-of-breed systems across the entire enterprise, and Yule's vision of this federated architecture is that this high-quality data will be integrated on the fly in these EHR, in these federated systems. That is to say, the current architecture of electronic health records cannot accommodate the very complex data which is arising in the lab and in radiology. And I think it's a lost cause. The only EHR that makes sense to me, and you will be talking about this, is that this complex data will be formatted in these best-of-breed systems and then joined together only transiently in the central system and then blown away because it'll be outdated in minutes. Yule will give you more information about this. So to summarize, these are the major points that I've made in this lecture. A new vocabulary is now being hatched, interestingly enough, by the for-profits like Siemens and GE to encompass a diagnostic, prognostic, and therapeutic continuum. And the phrases early health model and molecular medicine, in my view, begin to integrate what this means by medical imaging, meeting molecular diagnosis, and surgical path. Now, with this new biology, genetic, genomics, and proteomics, diagnosis will be rendered very quickly. That'll be the beginning of the process. And the art of medicine will be determining the prognosis and the appropriate personalized therapy. Molecular imaging is evolving very quickly, and this is an amalgam of sophisticated imaging technologies, not ISTs, plus in situ biomarkers. I believe that merger or convergence between pathology, lab medicine, and radiology makes political, economic, and quality sense, and the first step will be research collaboration followed by integrated reports and hopefully a better outcome and quality for our patients. Thank you very much.